Hi, it's Diane. It is Thursday, March 24th, and I'm here with the 8 o'clock group. We're going to be talking about buy-in and motivation, but before we get started on that, let's do celebrations and check-ins. Who wants to go first?
Hi, this is Dawn.
Hey, Dawn, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Why don't you want to check in first?
Yes.
Great.
So we had a couple of good days with my son getting downstairs and ready to get out of the house on time.
Yay!
But it's spring break this week, so no worries this week. And the good news also is we found out some information about the college you'll be going to that their Office of Educational Accessibility has accommodations for students with ADD that they can get test time, double the amount of time to take a test as long as they notify the office within a certain time frame. So we just have to get them an updated evaluation and have that on file with the school.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, congratulations. I know you've been curious about what it's going to be like for him and what kind of support he could get in college, and I bet that's a real relief to have that answer.
Yes, it is.
Awesome. Who wants to check in next?
This is Pat. Our celebration this week, we've had a pretty good week. Not too many outbursts, getting ready in the morning. Pretty easygoing this week.
Awesome. What do you think is different, Pat?
I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if it's maybe the workload at school is a little lighter, so that may be relieving some of his tension.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Who's next?
I'll check in. It's Miriam. I will say I think the tone of the home is better. I think we've had a lot more lighthearted moments, which is a nice thing because there's a lot of stress and deadlines going around the family.
Mm-hmm. Great. What do you attribute the shift to?
I think because we know there's the insane, my daughter's bat mitzvah is vastly approaching, and she's an incredibly anxious kid. So I think we're all just chilling to hope, you know, take the ease off of some of her outbursts and be a little silly and patient and what have you. But hopefully that'll be something we can keep.
Well, how does it feel to let the pressure off a little bit?
Chaotic. I mean, proud that we're doing that, and then look at the result and say, oh my God, this is a circus.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's part of it is figuring out kind of when to put pressure on, when to take pressure off, but it sounds like what you notice is that there's some advantages to being a little bit more relaxed, but there's some challenges in it as well. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Great. Let me double check and see if anybody else joined it. No, it's just the three of you guys. So let's loop back around and say, where do you want to take aim? Dawn, do you want to go first again?
No.
No?
I will, if I may.
Okay. Yes, absolutely, Pat. Go ahead. Was that Pat or was that Miriam?
Oh, no, it's probably me. I've been so waiting for, you know, learning more about buy-in. So I can't wait to know what to take aim at, because I guess the other part of it is just choosing, you know, how much I – what is the right amount to take aim at, and what is the, you know, how much do you really just let go, even though it's, you know, very basic, like brushing teeth.
So is there one area where you feel like getting her buy-in might be easier than others?
We're just going to leave her out because not a good time for her. There are three others we can jump in on.
Okay. All right.
You know, he had standard testing this week and did not take advantage of the accommodations offered to him, to say the least.
Okay, so I'm confused. So So what you're saying is you want to focus on your son and you want to focus on getting buy-in to take advantage of his accommodations? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to realize there's a reason to have it and use it. Sorry, something caught in there.
Okay, great. All right, cool. Pat.
You're asking what we're aiming at?
Yes, ma'am.
With my son, it's how to balance work and fun over the weekend, his schoolwork, like the long-term projects, and just everybody is happy at the end of the weekend rather than a struggle, you know, trying to keep him focused.
So help me understand just a little bit more. So it sounds like the challenge is that he's not – finding a way to pace his homework over the weekend because it would be much easier to have fun. Is that what you're saying?
Right. He'd rather, you know, he lives in the moment. So working on a book report due in a week, that makes no sense to him. But if he waits until the day it's due and it's not there, then he's in tears because he didn't do his work. So, you know, we help pace him.
So you're trying to you want to take aim on homework avoidance for extended assignments. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Okay. How would you adjust it?
Well, right now we're trying to give him some control in how he plans out his weekend. In other words, when does he work on this piece? And if he's got to study, when does he do that? And giving him breaks. In other words, he does some of his assignment, and then he can go out and play for a while, and then he can come back in. But we're trying to let him decide, you know, what will he do one day versus the other day, so he doesn't feel like we're telling him what to do.
Okay, understood. Great. So Stephanie and Brian joined. Hi, guys.
Hi, Stephanie.
Just Stephanie. Hey, do you want to do a quick check-in celebration and let us know where you want to take aim?
Sure. So we found a new therapist for Toby, who's a family counselor psychologist who is very focused on mindfulness. And I am optimistic that the children's version of mindfulness and meditation will actually help me, since it seems to be about the level I can manage. Been trying to get the kids to practice that. That's been good. And also got her kind of connected with the school psychologist so that maybe we can have a single plan going forward, which would be really nice.
Great.
So anyway, so that's been good. And tonight I mostly just want to focus on understanding some more ideas about motivation. So I've been conscious that I lately have been kind of pushing my agenda on both of my kids because I get frustrated when they seem to do almost nothing. So I'd be really interested to hear what other ideas people have.
So I hear that your challenge is avoiding pushing your own agenda. Is that what you want to focus in on?
Yes. I want to think about whether there are other ways to get them to – or do I just have to, like, to decide? Do I have to just wait till they care? Or do I continue pushing my agenda? Yeah.
So is there a particular area where you feel like, I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Miriam, which is, you know, is there a particular area where, or Pat, where is there a particular area where you find yourself pushing your agenda and you think that there's an opportunity to maybe to get more engagement?
To care about one's effort at school versus doing the bare minimum.
Okay. So then that's the level of detail on homework, is that right? Or is it assignments at school? Is it?
It's lots of things. It could be the inactivity at school, just deciding I don't like it. I'm going to lay down on my desk and ignore it. It could be the writing assignment where I scribble it so fast, close the book before anyone can see it, or I won't fix mm-hmm. spelling errors and grammar errors, even if I know they're there because I don't want to type it again.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like
attention
there's a
to
lot
detail
of things.
And sustained effort.
Yeah, so it's attention to detail and sustained effort on schoolwork. So Don, I'll get back to you in a second to take aim, but Stephanie, just stay with that and tell me when you get curious, what do you think is going on? And maybe pick just one of those because it sounds like there could be different things going on in different instances.
I think that there's a little bit of fear and kind of like, I know I'm not going to do it well anyway, so I might as well just get it over with. Or it's, I know I'm not going to do well anyway, so I'm not even going to start it.
Okay. So he's feeling defeated. Mm-hmm. And what else?
He doesn't like that feeling. He wants it to go away, so he wants to move on to something else where he can ignore it, ignore that feeling of failure, that feeling that he wants to, but I can't do it anyway.
Okay.
I mean, he doesn't feel that way if he goes off to play with his friends or go outside or do something different.
Great. So investment and engagement in schoolwork, and you can tell that part of what's driving it is, you know, is avoiding feeling like a failure.
Yep.
All right. So, Don, where do you want to take aim?
I need to help him find his motivation to finish high school because I found out that he does have senioritis. When I had a conversation with him before, not the last call, but the call before that one, where he said he wasn't really interested in going to school. He told me to check with him.
Don, somebody's got a lot of background noise. If you've got background noise, if you could put yourself on mute, that would be really great. Thanks. Don, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
That's okay. So I drilled down to find out what was going on with him, if there was a specific issue for with senioritis, and he just had senioritis. So I need to help him find his motivation to finish out the school year and not have the senioritis because he needs to finish strong. He needs to.
Okay, so you want to, So you want to take aim on helping him finish high school
yes.
With a bang or on a good note.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Great. Great. Okay. So everybody has a sense of where they want to take aim. And we're going to jump in tonight's topic, which is about motivation and buy-in. And this is such an important piece, especially I know all of you guys, I think all of you guys have older kids. Some of you don't, but particularly as our kids get older, motivation and buy-in becomes trickier because a lot of times with younger kids, their motivation is doing what mom or dad or teacher or whoever, whatever adult in their life is asking. A lot of our kids are motivated by, you know, doing what they're asked to do or being a good girl or a good boy. But as our kids get older and older, that motivation shifts, and so they no longer are externally motivated and become and are not quite at the point developmentally where they're internally motivated. And so that's where this kind of gap falls because they want to be independent, they want to be doing things on their own. Their peers from an age group perspective are often doing things on their own, and our kids are just not quite there yet. And so what happens is that, you know, we, a couple of you mentioned kind of pushing your own agenda. So we end up kind of being the driver. It ends up creating some resistance on their end. And so not only do we not have buy-in, but we have resistance because mom's always telling me what to do. And it ends up ultimately in a hot mess. And so the side effect of this is, you know, broken relationships. It's, you know, kids not feeling motivated. It's, you know, kids resisting doing what we want them to do. And so at some point, if you haven't started shifting from driving the work to having them be the center of the work, the older they get, the more difficult that becomes. And so really, if those of you who are listening have younger kids, even into middle school, and you find yourself kind of trying to be the motivation, this is a really important time for you to really focus in on getting buy-in and getting motivation, because without them, it's difficult for a couple of reasons. So one, with motivation, we know that the ADHD brain has a very difficult time doing anything unless it's genuinely interested. And I know that feels odd for those of us who are not ADHD, but it's important to know that, you know, if we have something we don't like to do or we're not really interested in doing and we're not ADHD, we kind of just buckle in and get it done. And it's not so easy with the ADHD brain. There has to be genuine interest. And so in your workbook, and I think we're on page, like four, what page are we on? 38, 39, something like that. You know, we're actually maybe it's more than that. It's 40 or something. There's five things that are listed that motivate the ADHD brain. And it's important to know that not everybody's motivated by all of these, but somewhere in one of these five is likely one or two things that your child is motivated by. So the first one is novelty. You know, is this a new and interesting thing? Never done it before. A lot of times if we put a new system in place or a new chore chart or whatever else, that just the novelty is motivating. The other side to that is that if you've got a system that's been working for a while, it starts to get boring. And so the novelty wears out and it no longer is interesting, which is why we often will find that systems will work for a while and then they'll stop working. In fact, I was listening to Elaine talking on the Sanity School call this past week about her own system for kind of keeping track of her work. And she actually said she has like three or four different ways of doing it because her brain gets bored. And so it's kind of like, okay, she'll do it this way for a while and then she'll switch and she does it this way for a while. And so kind of having something novel to continue to stimulate the brain can be really motivating. The second thing that's motivating is competition. And a great example of this would be, you know, maybe if you've got a younger child, using a timer to say, okay, let's see how many math problems you can do in 10 minutes. And or, you know, and let's see how many you can do. Okay, you've done five in the first 10 minutes. Let's see if you can do 10 in the next, you know, 10 minutes. Or if you both have to clean your rooms, then maybe have a race to see who can clean their room first. So that would be another way to use competition. Urgency is something that a lot of times we default to, particularly older kids, particularly parents. It's like, it's due tomorrow, I've got to get it done today. And so we know that urgency motivates the brain. In fact, I have a client who's ADHD herself, in addition to being a parent. And this is actually how she motivates her brain is she waits till the very last minute in her business to deal with a client issue, because that's one of the few things that she knows motivates her brain, which she knows is not the best way to kind of manage her life, but she knows that it works for her. Interest or intrigue is another thing that motivates, which is, you know, if something's, you know, we notice our kids, they get really hyper-focused on things that are really interesting to them, whether it's a great book or a TV show or a game or whatever it is. If it's interesting to them, they'll be engaged. And humor or play, you know, so if there's some lightness to it, if there's some creativity to it, if there's some fun to it, it can be a great way to motivate our kids. And so knowing and understanding and spending some time with your child, kind of looking at what is it that motivates you, is a really powerful thing. If you've got an older child, helping them to understand the role that motivation does play is critical. I remember very distinctly having a conversation with my son, probably fourth or fifth grade even, and he was working on a math problem, a math assignment, and it was like a 50-problem assignment. And he was going to split it over two nights. It was one of those it's not due till Friday things. And so he had 25 problems he was going to do each night. And the first night, he just flew through them. He got 25 problems done in maybe 25, 30 minutes. It was really fast, really efficient. And the next night, he spent like 2.5 hours trying to do the other 25 problems. And it was really, really interesting. And so we kind of, I challenged him to have a conversation about it afterwards. And I said, well, you know, what did you notice? I said, the first night, it only took you 25 minutes to get all of this done. And the second night, man, you were working on it for 2.5 hours. And he said, well, Mom, my show was on the first night. I needed to get my homework done so I could watch my show. And it was a great door opener because he had a perfect example of the role that motivation plays in helping him to manage his brain. And so that's just a really great example. I haven't really talked that much about buy-in, but the reality is that the two of these are interchangeable. And so if you've got a child who's not motivated, that goes hand in hand with buy-in. And so part of this is, you know, Stephanie, you talked about, you know, not pushing your agenda. As we begin to hand over the reins to our kids and have conversations about what needs to be done, when do you want to do it, how do you want to handle this, you know, finding ways to get their involvement and their buy-in in the conversation can be really important. So with that, what comes up for you guys as I talked about motivation and buy-in?
Well, this is Sydney. Earlier today, my son was doing a bunch of water balloons. It's pretty warm out here on the West Coast right now. And I knew that he would once again walk away with the pieces and balloons all over the yard. And, you know, we've had upteen million arguments about it with me saying, I won't buy them anymore if he won't put them up, blah, blah, blah. And I just said, hey, let's have a race and see who can pick up more first. And as soon as I act like I'm playing around with him instead of bossing him around, and as soon as I make it a race, then, you know, he's running around picking him up. I wouldn't say it was perfect, but at least he participated, which is better than usual.
Well, that's awesome, because here's the thing, is that part of what you're bumping up is what's a realistic expectation for your son. And it sounds like remembering to do it on his own is not likely to happen. Doing it without griping when you just request it sounds like maybe even a struggle. And when you make it fun, you can engage him and get him motivated to help along.
Yeah.
So how could you apply that to some other aspects where you're having a hard time getting him engaged?
It's hard to do it with schoolwork. A lot of times we have to do do this and then we'll play this. I know it used to work if his handwriting was really messy. I had a really large eraser, and I would dramatically start to walk across the room with it saying, oh, you know, I'm going to erase every word I can't read, and you better fix them before I get there, you know. And he would laugh and shriek and try to fix them a little bit. But it gets harder as he does his work more independently and, you know, like just shuts it and puts it away and zips it up before I even get a chance to look at it. So I have to figure out ways to get that humor back in when all I'm really doing is trying to check up to see that he did it.
Well, and I guess that's the piece of it, because here's the reality. At some point, they've got to figure out what the level of detail is going to be and what their buy-in is going to be. And so I think that's this kind of sticky sort of thing where you can say, hey, how do you feel? You know, hey, I see you finished this, you know, on a scale of effort. Do you know, you can say, do you feel like this is an A? Is this a B? Is this a C? You can ask some questions like that. You can say, how do you feel about your work? And I think that part of what I guess I would challenge you to do is to say, what of this needs to be his to own and what of this is yours to own? Did I lose you?
I'm still here. Sorry. I was thinking, is it, you know, one of them's in fourth grade and one of them is sixth grade. So like the fourth grader, I'm not quite ready to say, okay, you know, your learning is your own responsibility and how well you do is like, I think I'm still pushing him a little bit, but the sixth grader, I'm starting to wonder like, you know, how much do you care about your grades and how much do you care about learning how to do this? You know, what do you think the impact will be if you choose not to learn to write, for example? Yeah.
Well, and so here's the challenge with this is that the future rewards are so far away. And this is
right.
The reality is that, you know, it's like writing really well on this one assignment today to get it done when all I really want to do is get it done. And my teacher will just say, get it done. And I find this to be true, especially with young boys. It's like every teacher I've ever talked to has said it's such a common thing. It's like they do the bare minimum. And so if you're a mom with executive function and you've got a son who's challenged with, you know, with a learning difference or with ADD or whatever it is, your bar is going to look completely different than his.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so part of what, you know, ultimately you have to figure out if it's not important to them, what kind of influence can you really have? Do you create an external motivation? So you say, okay, you know, if you go back and spend another half an hour working on this and trying to make it better, I'll make it worth your while. You know, whatever, you know, there's all kinds of things you could do from that perspective. But ultimately, the question you want to ask, you've got to continue to ask is this my issue or is this his?
Mm-hmm.
So what stands out in that for you?
So I think in some cases it's his issue and he'll probably turn it around. I'm actually thinking of my older child at the moment. And I think at this point he's pretty worried that he can't do it and that he's just beating his head against the wall. So I've kind of, you know, intervened and hired him a tutor and he's going along with it. And I guess part of it is just kind of getting some feedback on from him of, does it feel better to have help or not? You know?
Yeah.
Because you still have to do the work. You just have help.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think that's the piece of it is that that's a great question to ask is to say, you know, how does it feel when you do better? How does it feel when you feel like, you know, when things are going the way that you want them to go? And because a lot of times, and your curiosity of what's really going on with him is so important. And I'd encourage you guys, you know, to go back if you haven't done that, as you're thinking about your challenge area, is to really get curious and say, what do you think is going on for them in that moment? And what you're saying is that, you know, it doesn't feel good to not do well, and he doesn't know how to do better.
Right.
So that's great. All right. Any other thoughts from folks? Dawn, what about you?
I'm just thinking through the list. It's kind of hard for me to find something that I can use with a 17-year-old. Sometimes humor works with him, but I don't know how to really try to apply this to get him motivated to finish school.
Well, so you're saying that, you know, you want him to finish school with a bang. So what do you think he wants, Don?
He just wants to not have to take tests and go to school every day. I mean, he's excited about college. But I don't know how to get him past the whole thing of not wanting to get up and go to school or finish high school, even though he's excited about college.
Mm-hmm. So how clearly does he see the straight line of performance now and its impact on going to college?
right now, I don't think he sees it. I don't think he's really thinking of it. I think he thinks, well, I've been accepted. We've paid the deposit. We've sent the information on housing.
So it's a done deal in his mind.
Yeah, in his mind, yeah. In his mind, it's a done deal.
And how true is that?
For the most part, it's true. I've never known a college to revoke an offer of admission based on the last semester of high school.
Okay.
So it may be a done deal. I don't know, but they do expect to see a final grade report for the senior year, for the last
right.
semester of senior year. So maybe that'll be the thing I need to tell him. You need to put your best foot forward because the guidance counselor still has to send a final grade report to the school.
So what do you think? So what's come out of any conversations you've had with him about this so far, Don?
Actually, we've only really talked about it once, but I asked him after he said he didn't want to go to school. And after I talked to you about it, I went back and asked him. I said, well, what is it? Is there something going on that you don't want to go to school? I just wanted to make sure there wasn't an issue with classmates or a teacher. And he said, no. He just basically, I'm just tired. I'm tired of sitting in class. I'm tired of taking tests. I'm just tired of going to school right now. So that was his answer.
Yeah.
And it, which is odd to me because I remember one year where they were out of school for a few days because of snow. And he says, Mom, I don't want to go back to school. I need to go back to school because he was tired of being at home. And now it's the whole opposite. He was just hoping for snow days on top of snow days because
yeah.
he just didn't feel like sitting in school.
So how do you think you could partner with him to find some motivation?
You know, it's really difficult because after the call 2 weeks ago, when the advice given was, you don't motivate him, he needs to find his motivation. So a few days later, we're sitting in the car, we're driving to school, and I said, well, what is it that will motivate you to finish out the school year without the senioritis? He goes, there's nothing. And then he talked about a concert that he wanted to go to, and I said, well, how about if I pay for this concert, the tickets for you and your friend to go to the concert? Will that motivate you? He goes, no, not really. And if that doesn't motivate him,
well, and I guess that's the question. So then I guess the question becomes, what's the realistic? So then it takes you back to realistic expectations, right, Don? So what's a realistic expectation for a kid who has senioritis? You know, is it an external motivation that says, I don't care how much senioritis you have, you still have to go every day? Or I'm going to make it worth your while and pay for this ticket, you know, as long as you do X, Y, and Z. I mean, so I think that's the piece of it is, as long as you can continue to have the dialogue with him and engage him in the conversation, figure out what is a realistic expectation for a kid who's really just not motivated to finish his last semester.
Okay. Because
so what comes up? Go ahead.
During the last call, and then what started to concern me was when he goes off to school, he's going to need to find on his own something to motivate him because he will hit roadblocks. You know, he'll have to adjust being in a new environment with new people, and he'll have to adjust and motivate himself to get things done.
Well, and that's why this
so,
can be such a great conversation to have, Don, is because he can, if he begins to understand the role that motivation does play, he can begin to use it as a tool. And he may or may not be ready to take that on. I think it just depends on developmentally where he's at.
Okay.
What comes up for anybody else?
Well, so my big question is, you know, the whole, the now and not now, and
mm-hmm.
the not, you know, not feeling the consequences. so, you know, as I'm listening, you know, my kids, quote unquote, get it done because they have to. They know they have to, and that's not because we're telling them. That's just, I mean, not for school stuff, let's say. For home stuff, not so much. And same thing, doesn't matter what external motivator, you know, they'll, you know, point blank say, doesn't matter. But it's, you know, doing it as well as you can or doing it more efficiently, you know, when they're spending hours on work that they could spend minutes on, when they're allowed to type a, you know, 4-page essay, you know, on a standardized test, but, you know, they don't bring that up, things like that. They just, it's just, you know, whatever, literally.
So what's important about it for you?
Well, that what's important is that, I mean, that's the other part is that, you know, in the, so he's in high school, you know, wants to and is capable of getting into a good school, but has the, you know, he'll be applying to colleges in a year, but he's really, you know, more of a 12-year-old doing that. So for mm-hmm. him to see the future and see that there's an easier way or understand that the way it's going is not going to produce the results he thinks it will, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, and it's a difficult situation to be when developmentally they don't quite get it yet.
Right.
And especially if they're old enough that they're resisting kind of your external motivation, I think that it puts you in this odd position. And so if he's in high school, the question is, what's important to him?
you know, getting on his bike and riding, not much more, which goes back to the, you know, how do you motivate, how do you measure doing that you could do things more efficiently? How do you measure that you really took advantage of what you can? You know, and then the other thing is the only place that, I mean, this is a kid who literally only has to ask for allowance once a week and he'll get it and hasn't in months, you know. And we had a conversation the other day. He's like, yeah, sometimes I forget, but often I don't. I just can't be bothered. Meanwhile, he's, right, you know, wants a car.
Well, so here's the thing is that it's the reality is that he's not, I mean, what's the realistic expectation right now, Miriam?
What's happening is a realistic expectation.
Yep. So I guess the question is if that's where he's at developmentally, what's the next level of independence that you could challenge him to in one particular area? So you're talking about specifically about accommodations and asking for help and accommodations, right?
Yep.
So tell me about an area where he gets frustrated because he's not doing as well as he'd like to.
I couldn't.
Okay.
Because he legitimately doesn't care, or he, you know, tells himself it's fine, that I didn't do as well as I could have.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's realistic at this stage that he'll begin to ask for accommodations, or is it really he's at the stage where he is still just learning and becoming aware of the places where he needs accommodations?
I think it's a third place. And it's not just the embarrassed thing. It's the if I don't absolutely, absolutely need it, you know, if it's just going to – you know, it's like getting a better pair of glasses where you really see clearly versus, yeah, you can see. You know, mm-hmm. that's where he is. I can see, that's good enough. It's not so black and white.
Sorry, I guess the question is, you know, are you, yeah, no, that does, that's a great analogy. And I think that, that this happens a lot when our kids get to this age, and it's kind of what Stephanie was describing, which is they've got the level of effort, you know, everybody's got their balance of effort versus outcome, right? And we see increased effort, you get an increased outcome. But for them, mm-hmm. when they think about the increased effort and what that's worth in terms of increased outcome, the value trade-off is different, if that makes sense. And
yeah,
so,
but it's, sorry, it's that whole here and not now and not now.
Right.
Now.
Right, and that's the reality, is that this is where he is today. And so
yeah, but the consequences come whether he's here. The consequences are going to come, you know, by the calendar, no matter where he is developmentally.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, that is true. So what are your choices? What are your choices?
I would like to know. I mean, it's pretty painful for him to wake up in 5 years and say, you know, have regrets or not really realize it.
Well, and of course you don't want him to have regrets. And you also know that you can't push him into doing these. That's what you've said, is you're not in a position that you can push him to do it. Is that fair, or do you feel like
you still have
leverage?
Yeah, no, the more I push, the less effective it'd be.
Right. So it feels like this is a no-win situation.
Yep.
So what go ahead.
This is Stephanie. I had an idea. I don't know if this is helpful or not, but sometimes for me it is. As I try to remember that there are people who take a different path, who go to junior college for 6 years and then finally figure out what they want to do and go on to be successful. It is very hard to remember that when I'm watching my sixth grader practically flunk out of junior high. But but I try to remind myself
appreciate
that there
that
are other ways to get there, but it's really hard.
Yeah. No,
we
I appreciate that. Unfortunately, we've really tried to have him take a year off along the way, you know, just have time for his development to catch up. You know, he switched schools, so he had the opportunity of doing 2 ninth grades, which actually wouldn't have been repetitive. But he is just, you know, I'm doing this because I have to, and I'm getting it done. And there's, you know, like he loves everything to do with cars. He knows exactly what college he wants to go to. It's an extraordinarily competitive school and engineering program. You know, you'll take a year off. You'll get your auto mechanic licensure. How fabulous will that be? Then you go to engineering school. Nope. So, yes, thank you. I appreciate that, but.
So I don't know what you mean by nope. I don't understand what you're saying.
Oh, he absolutely won't do that.
He won't do what?
No. He won't.
Take a year off.
Right.
Okay. So let's go back to now and not now, right? So what's important for you right now is that I think that he does what he can is at the level of investment that he has. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Because the reality is, I hear that your main goal is you don't want him to regret something in 5 years, and it's hard to know what's going to happen in 5 years. And you can look at it and say, you know, it's likely that doors are closing, and I know that this is what happens all the time, and I see it all the time in my clients as well. It's like, you know, every time they don't do something, a door closes. And so it's like you've got this vision for your kid's future, or they even have a vision for their future, and it's like, I want to go to Harvard, and I'm planning on going to Harvard. And you're like, you aren't going to go to Harvard if you don't pass this test. But they don't see that because they're just focused on now. And so I think the question I want to ask Miriam is, are you willing to consider that there's a bright future for your son, even when right now he's in the place where he's at?
Yes, absolutely. I just see it as and I hear you that I'm catastrophizing, and will absolutely take that. I hate watching him take a much harder route than he has to.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about kind of how you're looking at it, and you hate that he's. So, what does it mean to take a much harder route?
That, you know, like today, he could have. He's a horrible, horrible writer. He, you know, I'm sure could not get the essay out. It's a 4-page essay. I can't imagine the last time he wrote a paragraph. I mean, wrote physically with a pen. And so while his friends were done and out, he was probably still trying to remember what his thoughts were while he's, you know, writing along.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the reality of where he is right now, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But you're saying that if he had taken an accommodation,
he would have typed it and been done.
Yeah. So what?
You know, his hands were more likely to keep up with his pen.
So what happened when you had that conversation with him?
Yeah, whatever, next time.
So what do you think is really going on for him?
I mean, kind of what I've always thought, that for the better, for the worse, he has a wonderful way of insulating himself from bad, you know, whether it's...
So why do that? What's really going on for him? Why does he have to insulate himself from bad?
I'm sorry to take everyone's time, but this is lifelong. From he absolutely was going to have a brother and it came out a sister. So, you know, he had a imaginary sister, you know, he reads Night and The Guy Didn't Die. Like he just is able to create around him things that keep it from being bad.
What a wonderful gift.
Yeah, that's what I said, for better, for worse. You know, it's fabulous when you're 3, and, you know, it's fabulous for a lot of other things. But when you use it to say, well, I really expected, wanted, and was capable of, you know, getting this job, making this team, getting this grade, and I didn't, so it's really fine. You know, I think in life that's lovely, but I don't think most of us get to enjoy that until, you know, we already have money in the bank.
And it's a hard place to be in. I mean, and this is not an easy answer. And the reality is your choices are, you know, find things to externally motivate him and force him to do stuff that he doesn't want to. You can accommodate for him and jump in, and that may or may not work. You can let him flounder and struggle and trust that at some point he'll catch up and pick up or not. Or, you know, you can continue to kind of take it a step at a time and continue to dialogue with him about, you know, about taking more of it on himself versus it being you and your husband and your perspective of what, you know, is really best for him right now. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. I don't know what to say. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me shift in. Okay. So let me shift and check in with some other folks and see whether some additional thoughts have come up as we've been talking. Pat, I'm curious about kind of how you've been thinking about this, because I know that you've got some homework avoidance going on at your house too.
Well, this is Pat. So we're just going to have to probably try and change some stuff up, come up with some other motivators, and try and help him feel like he's, I think a lot of it, he's got to feel like he's a little more in control. So we just got to figure out ways to help him feel like, you know, he made the choice, you know, to do this piece now and then put this piece off. So that he's a...
Well, and the reality is that you bump up, and I guess this is kind of, we were talking about the now and not now thing, and I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's kind of like, if you know that the reason he avoids is because in his mind, it's not due now, and it's they don't really have the skill to kind of look and see, okay, this is, you know, 3 hours worth of work. I can do it all in one night, or I can do a half an hour a night for however many days. It takes a level of maturity that a lot of our kids don't have yet to kind of see that it's an executive function skill. Does that make sense?
Right, yes.
So is it something that how much involvement will he let you have at this point in planning?
Oh, definitely a lot.
Okay.
At this point, yeah, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the big picture yet. For something long term, he doesn't have the big picture.
Yeah. Well, and so one of the things that works well when your kids are still in dialogue with you, if they're still willing to have you put motivators in, is, you know, creating rewards to getting stuff done. You know, so it's kind of like if you get the first chapter written by Friday, then on Saturday we can go bowling. I'm totally making it up, but you know, it's kind of that what you were just describing, Pat, where you put in motivation for the process rather than the outcome. And we talked about process versus outcome in one of the earlier calls. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. All right. So getting close to the end here, I want to go to our workbook and at least ask our questions and hear a little bit in terms of checkout from everybody. So we're on the wrap-up page for getting buy-in and finding motivation, and there's four questions. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's my aha? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? To take a minute, jot down some notes, and I'd like to hear from all four of you, at least an aha and a commitment in terms of action. So whenever you're ready, somebody can jump in.
This is Dawn.
Go for it, Dawn.
So I think the realistic step to take is what you recommended, is to keep the dialogue open with my son. I think maybe if we continue to have conversations about getting to the end of the school year, he'll realize that it's not so bad. And maybe he will find something in talking to him. Sometimes he'll think of things, and maybe he'll think of something that will motivate him to realize that, okay, I only have a few more weeks left. Graduation's right around the corner, and, you know, I'm just not going to drop my pack yet. I'm going to make it through the end of the school year. So
yeah.
I'll just keep talking to him about what's going on, and hopefully that'll get him motivated to finish strong.
Well, and I think that the question is, Don, is you know, what open the dialogue to what, you know, what's a bare minimum? And this is a coaching tool that I use. It's kind of like if you're trying to get him to figure out what's realistic for himself, to say, you know, if you were going to hit a home run for the rest of the semester, what would you need to do? You know, what would that look like? If you were going to just squeak by to get through this semester, what would that look like? And so if you've got squeak by on one end and you've got home run on the other end, what do you want to set as an expectation for yourself? What do you think is realistic? And then have him kind of look and say, well, bare minimum was, you know, I skipped school 3 out of 4 days a week, and home run would be, you know, and I'm making it up, but do you see the conversation?
Yes.
So that might be a tool that you could use, Dawn, in addition to kind of just, and I love the ongoing conversation. That's great.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie.
So I think I'm just being really a lot more conscious about when I'm pushing my agenda and when is that okay, and maybe being kind of open about the fact that I'm doing it and why versus when I'm going to step back and ask. So I don't think I'm ready to give up on driving in all cases, but maybe to start practicing letting go a little bit and talking through the other options of, you know, well, what do you think the choices are and what do you think will happen and how do you feel about that? And that I need to start practicing that now before, while we're still kind of more in this protected stage.
Yeah, and it'll be curious to see kind of how much they get it. I mean, this is the challenge, is that they've got a you know, magical thinking going on, and that's the reality, is that they, you know, their grip on reality is very different than yours and mine. So what do you think is going to be most important about engaging him in that conversation?
I think actually for me, it's going to be checking back in, because I think we've had these kinds of conversations many times, and then, you know, kind of don't revisit it until there's some new feedback that things aren't going so well. And so I think going back to focusing, I think what you guys was in the book from last time, I've missed quite a few sessions, but the kind of focusing on, well, what is the process and the routine that we need to put in place that would get you there, and being observant and mindful of the effort and the routine, and then kind of being confident that the outcome will eventually take care of itself, and that right now learning to practice the process is actually the more important thing to focus on.
Love that. Love that. Cool. All right, Pat, what about you? What was an aha and a commitment?
Okay. I guess the aha is I need to probably focus more on motivating the process and maybe not always the final product. So what I've got to figure out is how to get, maybe break down things a little better and give him more rewards more often, maybe for smaller pieces, and not assuming he can do a big piece and then he'll wait and get the reward then. I think I'm probably going to have to look at ways to break it down smaller.
Great. And is there anything in particular that you need to do to set yourself up for success?
I probably just need to make sure I'm prepared before I talk to my son. I just need to make sure I've got some good ideas and maybe let him give me some suggestions for motivators so we can, you know, get that all settled first before we, you know, start trying to plan.
Great. Cool. All right. Miriam, what about you?
Sorry, just the dog was going crazy. I think my take-home has to be to remember the relationship and put that first and know that as much as I cringe and want to bubble wrap him from, you know, bumpy things, that that's not always possible.
And what does that mean practically for you? It's a mindset shift, kind of, right?
Yeah, no, it's you know, biting your lip and hoping.
Okay.
I just, you know, I feel like I've been saying for 5 or 6 years that, you know, I just want to see them get the systems while they're young and they're, you know, part, they can become more part of their skin. Part of their being.
Well, and it's really hard when our kids aren't ready to learn the thing that we know that they most need to learn right now, and it can be mind numbing when we, you know, it's kind of the quote that comes to mind is insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting something different to happen.
Right. And I think the hard part is that when developmentally they are ready, the resources aren't there. You know, your boss is not going to be patient the way a teacher has office hours or, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's hard when they're not ready to learn the lesson. And so it's just about being patient and about, you know, creating the moments that you can. And I love what you said about putting the relationship first. So, cool. Great call tonight, everybody. Thank you so much. Next Thursday night, there's a Lifeline call if you want to join us. And the PSS groups will meet in, not next week, not the week after, but the second full week in April, the week of the 11th. So we'll talk to you all soon.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.